I'm always down for competition. I think he would say the exact same. I think he's going to attack, I'm going to attack, and someone's going to come up short. And he's among the best few pitchers in the game. It's still a spring training. I think he would probably say that he's looking forward to in-season competition. Dominant kind of guy, so. But no, I don't glean too much off of that.
That was Joey Votto after his brief debut with the Toronto Blue Jays yesterday. One home run and a rolled ankle stepping on the bat in the dugout. Such as spring training. Hello and welcome to Blair and Barker for a Monday. Jeff Blair here in our Toronto studio, joined now by my co-host, Kevin Barker. And for those of you who aren't watching us on TV, Barker is on the balcony of his hotel room. There are birds in the background, cloudy. It's cloudy. I can definitely see water. Looks tough, Bark. Looks really, yeah. Really tough.
Yeah, it is tough. How's the weather in Toronto?
Weather's not bad. It's supposed to snow at some point this week, probably just in time for you to get home. So I'm trying to arrange that.
Is it 75 and muggy like it is here?
Negative. No, it is definitely not 75 and muggy. We have a ton to get to. Really interesting weekend, you know, such as spring training weekends are. I mean, normally at this time of the year, everybody's just kind of sort of mentally got packed up and ready to go. But we talked a little bit about, you heard a comment from Joey Votto homering off Zach Wheeler. And then I shouldn't laugh. I mean, stepping on a bat in the dugout and rolling his ankle. And, you know, I mean, you can insert your whatever line you want there.
He laughed.
He did laugh, yeah. He sounded very much like a guy who thinks he's going to be in Toronto for the home opener, to be honest. Anyhow, so, you know, Joey Votto, like the rest of us in life, is day-to-day. The Jays prospects played the Yankees prospects in the spring breakout game. It was not pretty. We're going to be joined by Jonathan Mayo, by the way, of MLB Pipeline to talk about that, in particular, the Yankees prospects. Spencer Jones might be a thing, but Kevin, for the Jays and their major league team right now, a couple of things I found really interesting this weekend. First of all, we saw Yariel Rodriguez make his debut. I want to talk to you about that because you've got some really interesting information on him. We're seeing, and Buck made a comment about this in the telecast, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. We've seen John Schneider basically run out the opening day lineup basically 3 or 4 days in a row, which is kind of nice to see. It's kind of nice to get that flavor, you know, going into the regular season. But beside all that, the Jays have today off, but there is stuff going on at the complex, isn't there? Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah are throwing sides today. And I know you've had a chance, Kevin, to talk to the players, talk to Kevin Gausman in particular. But what are we looking at in terms of Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah going forward here? Alek Manoah, he's not breaking with the team. I think we can just kind of push him off to the side right now. What is the plan for Kevin Gausman, including today's side session?
Look, I think the first thing you can take away from both of those guys is they're feeling great. That's the first step, is to, you have to feel healthy before you can see the best product that you can possibly throw out there. I think they were happy with Kevin's side. He threw the 23 pitches on Friday. He's doing, like you mentioned, another one today along with Alek Manoah. They're going to try and get him up to 60 pitches. That's the whole thing. How long will that take? You could figure almost, if he makes another start on the 20th, he makes another start on the 25th, he would make the start on the 30th. That start probably, if he makes it, wouldn't be in the big leagues. I would not see, just because of where the number's at now, the 23 pitches, you know, what he's trying to accomplish. You know, you're trying to see the best Kevin Gausman, at least he is, and you're also trying not to destroy your bullpen, at least early in the season. And the best way you do that is to not rush it. They have some depth, you know, the Bowden Francis of the world. He can make a start, right? It's, you know, I think they're a little bit more worried about when he's thrown 88 to 90 pitches in a game, how that's going to look. But short burst, I mean, you can't argue the stuff's off the charts. So I think they feel comfortable enough that he can give them enough quality that a resurgence offense can step up and do some things to score some more runs, hit some home runs, take a little pressure off, you know, what they're trying to make up for in the rotation. And it's at least early in the season to get guys to later into the season. So, yeah, and the Manoah thing, I think you could just look at it this way. Manoah's just a little bit behind Gausman. That's the way it is. Probably a couple of weeks behind him. Now, you know, what's that mean for the rotation? I think with at least early in the season with the scheduled off days, you could sort of get through if you bring Gausman back, if you got, you know, Bowden Francis sort of doing the things that they think he can do. Manoah will have a little bit of room to maneuver and you know, just be able to get back and be somewhat Alek Manoah. You're not asking for that Alek Manoah a couple of years ago. You just, you know, him going out there, giving them a chance to win a game. And I think they feel comfortable enough with their depth that they can do that and allow him to make some adjustments mechanically to where he does come back. And, you know, he's pitching every 5 days.
So, pardon me, if Kevin Gausman pitches on the 30th in the minors, what are we looking at in terms of a major league start for him?
Yeah, I think it would be that first game in Houston. That's sort of the benchmark, I believe. I just don't see it happening because of the pitches, the amount of pitches he has thrown. Again, this is going to sort of throw in his age and you know, the just everything, the totality of what makes Kevin good. They want to build up to that to make sure when they do give him the ball in a real game in the regular season that there's not a hiccup to where, you know, he pitches however many and then he feels it again and then they have to back him off. So they want to make sure 100% that he's ready and ready to go. I just don't see it in Tampa. Like, I think they feel comfortable enough about Francis to give him a start. Because, you know, again, they're very confident in the offense. Now, that's the feel you get is walking around and watching at least the first five guys in their lineup having the at-bats that they're having, that they feel confident enough that they're going to score runs and again, give just everybody some breathing room to figure everything out when it comes to the pitching side of the ball. So, yeah, it's – look, I think, again, the word that I've gotten is the two guys feel healthy. They feel confident with their health. If they feel those things – now they can go out and start working on, you know, what it takes to be really good. And seems like that's the case, at least the people I've talked to.
We did see Yariel Rodriguez pitch on the weekend. Two innings pitched, one hit, two strikeouts. He did give up a home run, 20 strikes and 36 pitches. It looked to me, Kevin, like he threw about 23 different pitches of those 36 pitches. I'm only half kidding. He has an arsenal. There's no doubt about that. He has a collection of pitches. My question to you is, though, we know that there is such a thing as having too many pitches. And we know that stuff that plays in other leagues doesn't necessarily play in the majors. How are the Jays approaching Yariel Rodriguez? And could we see the Jays I hate using the phrase take pitches away from guys because it makes it sound like you're disciplining them. But could we see the Jays try to get him to maybe focus on a certain number of pitches and shelve the less impressive pitches?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think it's all the moving parts that he's doing. Now, look, it's fun to watch on TV, all the different arm angles and, you know, the starting and stopping and trying to repeat that and throw strike one and doing it with 15 different pitches. He does have a lot of pitches. You know, when you're trying to do that to lefties and righties, sometimes you forget about what's important as a starting pitcher, which is, you know, to get ahead and throw quality stuff to big leaguers. And again, Pete Walker is, in my mind, the best pitching coach in baseball because he sometimes just takes a step back and lets it play out. And I think that's where they're at with Rodriguez is, you know, you can't just jump right in there and start saying, don't do this, don't do that. You know, you could tell a little bit of nerves just that he was overthrowing some balls. He was missing arm side. You know, you could hear a little bit more grunting than I think normally you would hear from him, which will tell you that, you know, he's feeling it a little bit. They gave him a little money. You know, there's some expectations there and he's trying to impress and he didn't pitch last year. There's a lot goes into that. So, Petey's trying to take a step back, look at, you know, sort of his process of what it would take and what he thinks it takes him to get through a start. They like what they saw. They like the velocity. They, for the most part, like the break. I sort of know for a fact, I don't think they like all the moving around, like, you know, the starting and stopping consistently at the big league level, just being able to make it look the same, you know, the same release point and all those pitches coming out of the same slot. It's hard to do that. Like, it's, and you can get away with those kind of things where he's been pitching in the past. You can't do that in the big leagues. You can't do that in the American League East. Like, the lineups, the middle of the order is just too good. So, you know, they're going to probably refine that, refine what he, you know, should, I think, what they think should be throwing in certain counts at certain times against certain hitters. But, you know, look, again, I don't think you should take a ton away from how he looked, other than he's got really good stuff. And you can tell he does it with some vinegar. Like, he wants the ball. He's going to throw it. And, again, he's not used to throwing with that pitch timer. That's a big thing, too. You're getting it going. You know, there's a lot going on there. I mean, which pitch am I throwing to which batter? So, there's a lot going on there. But I think they were happy with the stuff. And now it's just – in his next start, it sounds like he'll get 45 pitches. Maybe the 45 will look a little different. Maybe they'll start adding something to his plate, which is, you know, maybe throw this pitch a little bit more in this count, which will make your other pitches seem to look a little bit differently to some better hitters. Because you got to think, the later you get in spring here, the more you're going to face the big boys. Like, the lineups are what they are now. He's getting the top of most big-time lineups, and then he'll have to do some things, and maybe they'll put a little bit more on his plate. But I don't think you can argue the stuff. They're happy with the stuff.
Let's play along with this a little bit. What does he need to have success in the majors? Like, what type of pitches does he need, do you think, to be a successful pitcher?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can take any pitcher serious unless you can throw strike one with multiple pitches. If you're going to be a legit starter in the big leagues, you got to have a little unpredictability. You know, can he flip a slider? Is it a slurve? Is it a slider? Is it a curveball? Like, it seems to me like he's trying to have all three at three different speeds. I'm just not sure he can consistently do that, because you'll be falling behind. And he doesn't throw 99. I mean, it's more 94. Right. He was sitting at that. I think that, you know, he'll top out sometimes occasionally at 96, 97. But for the most part, he's pitching at 93, 94. That will tell you unpredictability is a big thing of this, right? It's, you know, swing counts like 1-1. Can he flip a breaking ball, you know, backdoor it to a lefty to get a little roll over to the first baseman, or get a foul ball to get back in a count, get ahead in a count, those kind of things. And, you know, what's he need? I just think it's consistency with the delivery. That is the big thing. I've said this to you a bazillion times. Every person at the big league level who stays there for a long period of time looks the same all the time. Pitching is no different. Fielding is no different. Running the bases is no different. Hitting is no different, right? It's just where things certain go when it leaves your hand. It's like the barrel, right? My mechanics can all look the same when I'm hitting. It's just the barrel's going to different quarters because that's where the ball's ending up. It's not because your mechanics are any different. And that's where I think they're going to have to try and get him to, just when the foot hits the ground, everything's on time. It looks the same. And maybe they're, you know, able to refine sort of the mechanics part of it first, and then, you know, put a little bit more on his plate when it comes to take away two or three of them, throw two or three of your best ones. Now you can do it in different counts and work the fastball around in all different quarters. He can do that because he's got good stuff. You can see that. Like, it's got a little extra gear to it. The hitter told you that by watching the game yesterday. Now it's just refining it and, you know, getting to – how do you get a good lefty out? That's the thing, right? What's he throwing to that? Glove side looked to me like it was a little thing. I don't know if that was nerves or just mechanics, but there's some things that he needs to work on, which is good. Can't teach talent. He has that, I think, which will help.
And a reminder that the Jays signed him to a 5-year, $32 million contract, and they only have options on Yariel Rodriguez this season. So after this season, you can't send him up and down the minors without putting him through waivers. So that suggests to me that they won't rush this guy. I think Buck made the point during the telecast. You can maybe see him at some point this year, but they're not going to rush him. Whatever you got to do, you got to do it now.
Right? Yeah, it almost sounds like It almost sounds like you'd see Ricky Tatum before you'd see him throw in a game.
Perfect. Yeah. My next question on Friday, or my next comment, Ricky Tatum, 2 1/3 innings pitched, 3 hits. It was the second start of the spring. Mitch White, we saw 3 1/3 innings of Mitch White against the was it against the Minnesota Twins? Probably just move
it
on.
Was.
Probably
it
just
was.
Move on about that. you know,
I wouldn't. Again, this gets back to that thing. If you see Gosman missing a couple of starts to begin the season, and you see Manoah missing a couple of starts,
it's got to be Mitch White then, doesn't it?
It will, but you could see some things happening, right? They start with an opener, or they follow up with Trevor Richards. It's not so much because I think they love the off-season adjustments that Mitch White's made. Mechanically, he's changed some things with his lower half, which, you know, we can get into more of that when we do see him in live action in the regular season. But he has, you know, made some changes with that, which would allow the velocity to go up. I mean, it's worked. Like, you can't argue. You know, we sometimes laugh at it because it gets hammered. I don't think it's the fastball. A lot of the times it's getting hammered. It's more of the, he just doesn't have good finish to it. And the heater that he wants to throw, he's not throwing, and it runs a little bit more. That means velocity goes down. Location is bad, and big league hitters just, you know, when you miss and you're not locating and you're Mitch White, bad things happen. But look, I think he's sort of the depth that I've been talking about, and it's short burst. That's where it's at. It's not so much getting him, you know, to throw 85, 90 pitches. And sorry about the noise. Somebody's mowing the yard down here. It's not the 85.
Must suck.
We're in Florida. That's what
I don't have that noise. I didn't have that
in Florida.
I didn't have that noise in my backyard in our neighborhood this weekend, Kevin.
June.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
You'll have it in June.
Yeah maybe. So sorry, July or August.
They're putting something on the yard.
Oh, I'm sure it's Florida. It's probably cancerous or something like that. Anyhow, continue.
Absolutely. But again, I think they like Mitch White in short burst. It's just, how do you, you know, get to six innings and turn it over to a really good bullpen? That's the thing. It's Bowden Francis is the same way. It's short burst. The stuff is with Bowden anyway. It's almost elite. It's just that from 60 pitches to 85 pitches, which is sort of what you have to give them if you're starting to get you five or six innings, which is sort of the little thing that you're trying to figure out. But both guys are the same. I don't see it becoming an issue just because of where Manoah seems like he's at and where Gosman seems like he's at, that, you know, they are a better team when Manoah is making starts and Bowden Francis is from pen because of the stuff and just the way Bowden can give you a plethora of different, you know, innings and who he can come in and face. He can get lefties out, he can get righties out because of the invisible fastball that he throws. So they like that. It's just, you know, you got to be careful of how you throw it, how much you throw them. But they like the mechanical changes that Mitch has made, and it sort of forced them into, if they have to, they're not afraid to throw him, basically.
Well, they've certainly been patient with him. They've certainly devoted a lot of time to him. So that would suggest to you that, one, somebody really likes him in the organization. And two, I mean, if you're going to invest that time and energy, at this point you might as well see what you got. I mean, you might as well.
That's fair. I think also it is, you don't have any other options.
Well,
I mean, again, it's
not
it's
even Paulo Espino.
Well, I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's been around a long time. You got to look.
It's been
you're piecing this thing together, and again, it's matchups. It's you know what team you're facing. There's a lot of things that go into when you're making starts and how many innings you need and all those kind of things. So there's a lot goes into it. And again, I hate to bring it full circle back around to the offense, but boy, everybody I've talked to, at least the way the first five guys look in that order, they feel real confident. They feel confident that it's going to make up for a lot of sort of issues that they're having when it comes to health-wise in the rotation.
Yeah,
most
I was
early on.
That's a perfect segue because I did want to move on to the lineup. Before I do that, though, I just want to touch on Joey Votto. You know, we just touched him briefly at the start of the show. What's a good rest of the spring for Joey Votto?
Well, not stepping on bats.
Well,
that would help.
Yeah, like not rolling your ankle would be good.
That's a new one. I mean,
what's a bat doing in a dugout?
I mean, there's bats everywhere in the dugout. It's just you got to be careful, right, where you're stepping, and sometimes you're excited when
you got to fire the bat boy.
Well, you know what that is, too? That's excitement. That's something he's been working on off the field, translated to on the field, right. Because that's the first thing out of his mouth after he made fun of himself for falling, tripping over a bat, which is what you do. You know, you laugh at yourself. Sometimes you have to do that. And it sounds like it's day-to-day. It's not a huge deal, which is a plus, especially if you're seeing the swings on some fastballs off a Weaver that he gave you in that first pitch, in that first bat, and hit that home run to left center field. That's where it's at, right? It's just, again,
is it
what the expectations is for Joey, who knows? But, man, if you can get some consistent swings like that one, that'll help the lineup for sure.
Is it more important for him to see at-bats early against big league pitchers? You know, in other words, is that a good day for him? Three at-bats against the starter in a Grapefruit League game who's going to be in the major league roster. Is it better for him to see that than, you know, guy in uniform number 89 pitching who may start the year in Double A?
You're this time of spring, you're only seeing those dudes from about the seventh inning on.
True.
Up until the seventh inning, you're getting the boys, and Joey ain't going to
so
be
that'll
in the
be,
game.
But that'll be good for – that's what I guess what I'm getting at. That's, you'd rather see that, wouldn't you? If you need to get a read in Joey, wouldn't you rather see him right away against guys who are going to be in the majors as opposed to –
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I would guess that it would give you a little bit more, you know, picture of what you could expect in a regular season game.
Mm-hmm.
But, how many fastballs is Weaver going to throw right down the middle with Joey Votto? It's that kind of thing, too. I think it's just more of about his finish, how it felt to him, and where the ball went. You know, that's the thing. He's poking fun about pulling the baseball is mistakes. Like, it's that thing, right? And hitting line drives to left center field. He's not always going to hit home runs over there, but I think it's how straight it is. When I played with him, that was a big thing in batting practice is he hits a line drive to left center field because he's left-handed. He wants to see that thing straight. He don't want to see tail to it because if he sees tail to it, that means he's not getting finish and length to his swing, right? He wants to finish it. And it just seems to, when you hear him talk, the 40-year-old version of Joey is not so much who he's facing. It's between his ears that if he's healthy and he thinks his mechanics are on par, no matter who is facing, the barrel should be ending up because of where the pitch is, and he should have the finish that he needs to have the ball go where it wants to go. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit more to what you're asking than just cut and dry of who's standing on the mound.
All right, so we talked about the offense. This team is hitting a fair number of home runs this spring. I think they're fifth in the May. I mean, whatever. A lot of those home runs are not off major league pitchers, but they're hitting home runs.
Don't do that.
I'm saying they're. We talked about this is something they have to do this year.
You'd be the first guy coming on here if they weren't hitting any. So they're hitting and screaming about Don Mattingly.
So they're hitting home runs. We're seeing them hit home runs. The top five in that lineup really looks good. And as mentioned at the start of the show, John Schneider and the Jays, they've been running out basically opening day for the most part. Have you been able to get a sense, Kevin, of the impact Don Mattingly, who is now the offensive coordinator, has had on this sort of team-wide approach? And what are you seeing from these guys from the top of the order? Because you're right. I mean, there are going to be games where the Jays are going to have to outscore their mistakes to win.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's a lot of teams. I mean, that's not just the Jays. Sometimes and during the season, even in the playoffs, you're going to have to outscore the other team, which would mean, you know, you got to put up more than five runs. That's the number is, you know, don't average less than five. Average five runs, and you should be ending up where you want to end up, even if you are in the American League East. And I think that's the goal is the one thing that stands out to me is Dalton Varsho. Dalton Varsho seems to have pushed them into – at least against right-handed pitching, putting him in the five hole, which is from where he was at last year to where he is now, it's just giant for him. Like you just notice the at-bats he has. Like it's, you know, he takes a strike, it's okay to fall behind. Like he feels comfortable enough that in himself and his mechanics and what he's done in the offseason, you know, whether you roll your eyes about that chopping wood thing or not, you know, what that's going to bring to him, the mindset wise, all those kind of things, it seems to be working with him. And for him to be able to push this team and this organization to John Schneider and to put him in a five hole, because that's a run producing spot. Like you're going to come up, especially who's hitting in front of you with a lot of dudes on base. And those at bats are going to be huge for your team and your organization to score a bunch of runs. And for him to look the way he's looked is a big deal. I just, think 1 through 5 is when you watch their at bats on TV, when they get pitches, they're going where they're supposed to go, right? Forget about Bo. Bo can do things with quadrants that most people can't do, right? With his mechanics and where he starts his barrel and how high he kicks his leg and the timing of his stretch. Like, he can do things in different quadrants than most can. But all the other guys, like Vladdy gets a ball in, he pulls it in the air. Like, you do that a lot. George Springer's the same way. He gets a ball in, he's pulling it in the air. Like, it's that will tell you that mechanically. And Turner, look, I like the at-bats with dudes in scoring position. Mm-hmm. You're seeing he ain't trying to hit 3-run homers all the time. It's okay to hit a 19-hopper to the center fielder with 2 outs and a dude standing at second. Like, it's okay. He's bought into that. He'll take pitches to sort of be able to mechanically do that, have length in that swing and stay through it. And if I get jammed, I'm going to get jammed the right way, and I'll have success because I'm swinging at the right pitch. I'm having the right approach between the ears. I'm mechanically sound. I'm not overswinging. I mean, it came on our show and said that don't overswing. It's not a, you know, the at bats with dudes in scoring position is no different than a bat leading off. It's easier to say than it's easier to do. But boy, you're seeing it on that TV whenever he walks to the plate with a dude standing at second, at least the last couple of games, that it looks that way. So yeah, like the first 5 guys, and then you could also throw Kirky in there. Kirky's bats look better. Like, you know, I still don't like the rotation. He never gets off his backside, which is an odd way to hit because, you know, you'd like to cover more parts of the field, right? You want to pull a ball in. You got to sub most of the time, get better rotation. He's one of the guys that don't do that, but it seems to be working. You know, stay away from the ground ball. If Kirky can do that because of the bat to ball skills, you know, he'll get the hanging slider middle away, hit the line drive to right. You know, it ain't the right field line, it's the right center field. And I think, I don't want to say it's because of Don Mattingly, because I think these guys have talent and they understand that, you know, you have one bad year, you probably can't have 2 bad years in a row. So there's some expectations and there's some urgency there. But I think Donnie Baseball just sort of being that quiet guy in the room who ain't going to run up to somebody and go, hey, stop doing that, do it this way. He's going to let the player come up to him and say this. And maybe, you know, because it's Donnie Baseball listening, maybe that's been a good thing. At least that's what I've heard from people that I've talked to about Donnie Baseball.
I was going to say, do you think that maybe we, pardon me, we underestimated, you know, how much stuff he had in his table last year? Because we always ask, and we're not the only ones. Other people have asked that question, right? I mean, we talked about Vladdy. Vladdy basically got help, tried to get help from everybody this year, last year. And we were saying, okay, my goodness, you've got Don Mattingly there. Even if Dave Hudgens or Guillermo Martinez, even if they're not giving you what you need, you've got Don Mattingly there. We know what a great hitter he was, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, and I had someone point this out to me at the end of the year. You know, there's a lot in his plate. There's a lot of logistical stuff he was doing as a bench coach last year. He had responsibilities. He wasn't just sitting there and saying, you know, if you need help hitting, come and get me. There were things that he had to do. This year, he's not going to have to do that. This year, he's going to be focused in hitting. And maybe you will see him have the impact that, you know, a lot of us thought he was going to have initially when he got here.
Okay, well, we'll take this from, there's a couple of ways to break that down. We'll take this from his side of his point of view. They had 15 hitting coaches last year. I mean, what's he going to do? Like, you know, he's not one of those guys that's going to rush in there and say, you're teaching it wrong. You're saying it wrong.
He's going to stay in his lane because major leaguers do that.
It's just not him. Yeah. He's not going to do that. And this year, you know, it's more of he has a bigger voice. He's the first guy they're going to walk up to. It's not going to be Guillermo. I mean, I'm sure certain guys like Guillermo, the way he speaks to him and the things he says and the you know, the one little word things like, you know, shoulder, like that will trigger something that says, keep your shoulder in. I don't know if that's the word, but that's sort of, you know, every guy has their own guy. Taking this from the player side of it, no offense to anybody other than Donnie Baseball, but why the heck would I walk up to Guillermo Martinez when I was struggling and ask him how he used to hit a double in the gap when he struggled? Because he never did. Like, it's that. This team, this is not a young team. This is not a rebuilding team. This is a veteran team trying to win a World Series. This has a bunch of guys who know how to do it. It's just those times where you're going through it and you can't figure it out. Whatever you're doing off the field is just not translating. Sometimes you need experience. What's this saying? You can't teach experience? Well, sometimes you need that. And for these guys just to have Don Don Mattingly to walk up to and say, hey, when you weren't hitting the breaking ball, you were swinging at balls. When it's out of the hand, it looked like a strike. What did you do? Mm. And I don't know what he would say, but maybe he'd say something that would trigger a guy to go, wow, I like that. Maybe I can go and work on that, and it would translate, and it would make you better, because it's a game of inches. If I lay off that, I give that pitcher a chance to screw up. You know, there's not too many pitchers anymore. There's more throwers. So if I can take that nasty one, and if that comes from Donnie Baseball's experience, it just seems like the people that I've talked to, I think he's having a bigger effect on this team than maybe we give him credit for.
Well, Major League Baseball started a new initiative this spring called the Spring Breakout. Spring Breakout series over 4 days, 16 exhibition games, all 30 Major League teams fielding clubs of their best prospects or prospects. In some instances, the quote-unquote top prospects for different teams are still with the Major League camp, so they didn't take part. The Jays drew the New York Yankees as their opponent in the spring breakout game. And, you know, you don't want to read too much into one game, certainly. One game, one day. But the Yankees prospects beat the Blue Jays prospects 9-1. And they made an impression, to say the least, the Yankees prospects did. Jonathan Mayo is a writer with MLB.com and MLB Pipeline. He was at the Yankees-Jays game, and he's put together a list of players who have really impressed so far in spring breakout games. We want to talk to Jonathan also about where this goes, because I don't think this is just a one-off. I don't think this is just somebody's experiment. I think there's probably a long-term plan here for this thing, and I think what we're seeing is a continued shift in how Major League Baseball develops players, and by extension, what happens to the minor leagues. So, a lot to talk about with Jonathan Mayo. We'll do that next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. The Blue Jays have today off. They will be back on the field tomorrow. You can catch the game live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. The Jays against the Baltimore Orioles, 107 first pitch in Dunedin. And it'll be Cole Irvin on the mound for the Orioles. Chris Bassett makes the start for the Blue Jays. It'll be his fifth start this spring. And it's pretty much been the type of spring you'd expect Chris Bassett to have. Just getting work in, 0.82 ERA, and looking very much like he's ready to get the regular season going. We talked a little bit about this with Kevin Barker on Friday. We talked about it as well a little bit in the first segment. Major League Baseball Spring Breakout Series was a new initiative this spring. It's a four-day showcase, 16 exhibition games. All the major league teams fielded their own prospect roster. As I mentioned, some teams didn't have their quote-unquote number one or number two prospects with them because they were still with the majors. But I watched two of the games fully, and I watched bits and pieces of probably six of them. And I want to bring in Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com and MLB Pipeline. Jonathan was in Tampa for the Jays-Yankees breakout game. First thing I want to say, Jonathan, is I love the futures game. I've been saying for years baseball has to figure out a way to leverage the futures game more than it does. I thoroughly enjoyed this. And you know, the reaction that I'm getting from people anecdotally and in social media is the breakout series was a hit as well. It was fun seeing. We get to see those guys during Grapefruit League games in the seventh and eighth innings sometime, but it was fun to see the level of competition we saw. And I'll just ask you two questions before we get to the Jays and Yankees specifically. One, what did baseball want to accomplish with this? And two, where do we go from here?
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it as well. I zigzagged across Florida to get to three games in 3 days, so it was fun for me too. I think what they were trying to accomplish is kind of what you were pointing at, which is continuing to shine a light on the future of the game. There's so much more interest in prospects now, thankfully for my own financial well-being. But, you know, people are paying attention, and fans of teams want to know who's coming next. And you know, the futures game is great, but you only get one or two players from each organization. This is a chance for each farm system to show what's in the cupboard. And in a one game, you know, kind of situation, you're not going to draw any conclusions from it. But, you know, I've never seen in all my years doing this, an initiative coming from Major League Baseball that was so universally liked by players, by player development staff. You know, the logistics can get hairy sometimes when you're trying to do something like this. And everybody was very excited about it. And I think the objective was to sort of shine a light on these players. And I believe that mission was accomplished. And then where do we go from here? The initial concept was for it to be more of a tournament. The logistics of that, as you would imagine, are not small. And so maybe we can get to that at some point in time, how that would work out scheduling wise and things of that nature, can be decided by people who are much smarter than me.
You know, there've always been minor league games going on during spring training, and, you know, they've been useful with, the Blue Jays use them, and a lot of teams use them to, for example, keep pitchers away from teams they may be facing early in the season, but allow them to get work in. Is there any, do you think we're almost at the point where we might see some sort of, even a league, like a league to run parallel to spring training involving prospects? Because, you know, quite frankly, it appears as if there might be some money to be made here. And not every, you know, people want to go, especially people from the north, they want to go sit in the stands, have some beer, enjoy the sun, and watch baseball. And, you know, if you're getting prospects, I've got to think there's a lot of people wouldn't balk at paying to see that.
Well, I do wonder if eventually you'd have diminishing returns if it was an everyday kind of thing. Mm. I think you're getting a good amount of prospects every day. What made this special is that it was kind of a spotlight and a showcase. You know, I like the idea of there being more than one game. Whether it's a home and home series, whether we try to do something that kind of mirrors the NBA's in-season tournament,
right?
Where maybe over the course of 3 weeks, you play three of those games, and then you can have some sort of championship or that sort of thing. I think that could be cool. I don't know that you want to do it every day, especially because, to your point earlier, in terms of needing prospects, one, to show what they can do in the big league, you know, in front of the big league staff, even if they're not competing for a job, but also to help the major leaguers not have to stretch themselves out and still have talented players on the field. I think you're not going to want to take away from that too much, but this is just me kind of spitballing off of your spitball.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead, Kev.
The players that are on the fringe that are not in the top 30, you know, being in the top 30 is a giant deal. It would get you in a game like this. And when you're in a game like this, you're not only playing for your team, you're playing for the other teams as well. I don't want to say feelings because, you know, there is no feelings in baseball, but if I'm a player and I'm not getting as many opportunities as those top 30 guys, where does sort of the minor leagues end up? That would be the question I would have to ask. I mean, if just going forward and they add more games to this, and it's like you, it's a tournament, say tournament's three or four or five games, and there's, you know, only a certain amount of players in that, how do they sell it to the other players that are not in the top 30 is my question.
Yeah, you know, someone did bring that up, another former player. And it is, I think it's really important to take that perspective in, that there are probably some people who are like, how come I'm not playing in this thing? You know, I think might sound a little dismissive, and I don't mean it to be, but you know, I think the one thing is that, you know, I think competition is always good, you know, so that, you know, you want to play in this thing, step up, you know, just like you want to move up levels, just like you, you want a chance to make it to the big leagues. Now, remember, this is a roster of somewhere between 23 and 27 players. It was this go round, and who knows if it's multiple games, you probably can make roster changes, especially pitching. There were plenty of non-top 30 guys on all of the rosters. Even the really, really stacked farm system rosters had plenty of non-top 30 guys. So I do think that there is a mix and an opportunity to for those kinds of players to show what they can do. And, you know, not as much as it would be if it, you know, if you had endless amounts of these kinds of games. But, you know, as we're speaking, I'm actually writing up a story on where we're putting out an all spring breakout team, you know, first and second team. And there are plenty of non-top 30 guys who are making that list.
Good.
You know, we've focused a lot on the Blue Jays minor league system. We focused a lot on it when Bo and Vladdy were coming up. I mean, it was a daily report and where they're going and how they're doing. And I almost get the impression, look, I'm not going to read too much into one game, but based on what I saw, based on what I've been reading, you know, and based on rankings, and I think we all understand that there's, you know, rankings can change. But, you know, Jonathan, I mean, I got to say, I look at the Orioles' everyday lineup and I look at the guys they're still going to have in the minor league system. I look at Tampa Bay. I look at Boston. I look at the Yankees, and I know that you guys have ranked all those organizations, I believe, higher than the Blue Jays. And I got to tell you, I look at this and I go, like, where's the next Jays core? And more to the point, I almost get the impression that in some ways the Jays have just been kind of, you know, we got Vladdy and Bo. That's good. That's all we need. Vladdy and Bo. Well, guess what? You only got him for two more years. And I'm kind of pining for my own Spencer Jones. You know what I mean?
Well, everyone wants their own Spencer Jones. That was a special, you know, he has a chance to be a really exciting player. And he rose to the occasion, you know, during that spring breakout game. Yeah, I mean, the farm system is, like, the guys that are exciting are further away. And, you know, so when it comes to a game like that one game, especially, I think it stands out that, especially pitching-wise, you had guys, you know, like Landon Morales is really interesting to me. I remember him, you know, in high school, but that was just last year, mm-hmm. and he's barely pitched. So that was what... That was a huge setting to put him in, and hopefully he took something out of that, even though things didn't go well. But you know, the players that are exciting that could be the next core, you know, between Brandon Barriera having missed so much time, and you know, Arjun Namala, it was great to see him in a setting like that. He's just getting started. Those are the guys that I think are the ones that you're going to hopefully be able to build around and kind of, you know, and if you can build around, then you're rebuilding and restocking the system, which I think everyone is starting to, you know, show that you need to be able to try to do that. It's awfully hard to win at the big league level and maintain a really deep farm system. Very few teams are able to do it. You mentioned some of them. The Orioles are now in this space. We'll see if they can continue the farm system, because eventually those guys either have to make so the big leagues or get traded, or you're going to have a roster of 28-year-olds at AAA never getting an opportunity.
Yeah, I hope you see more of it. Like, I just wonder if you're an organization, if you're watching that game, you know, would it rush you to do something to a player that you weren't ready to do? Like, if you saw somebody at short that had a really quick move and had an unbelievable arm that you really weren't expecting. Jonathan, I wonder if that sort of speeds up the process for those players. And it's almost, you brought up a good point about trading. It's almost like showcasing, if you're on a really good organization and you need to trade, and other organizations may be able to see some of those players at the highest level against the other great competition. Have you heard anything about that? Like how these organizations will use what they saw in that game for the player or against the player? Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, they've all been doing it long enough not to take too much out of one game. But it's a data point, you know, just like the Futures game is, just like the Arizona Fall League is. And listen, scout the backfield games that, you know, the general fans don't go to see. So they're seeing all these guys. I think more than anything, what can be taken away is how a young player, like, I don't think you're going to worry too much about a young player, you know, failing in that kind of setting. And likewise, you're not going to put too much stock into, like, wow, that guy was amazing. You know, Spencer Jones did what you hope a Spencer Jones would do against a lower level of pitching, and he did. So that's great. But I'm not going to worry about, you know, the fact that Arjun Amala went 0-3. I think, to me, it's more, how do they carry themselves when the spotlight is a little bit hotter and if more people are watching and it's a larger stage? You know, I was before I was at the Yankees Blue Jays game, I was at the Marlins Cardinals game, and you know, neither of those farm systems are ranked super highly, but the Marlins started Thomas White, who was you know, a second round pick at a high school from Massachusetts, and he was incredibly poised, and he struck out, you know, two in his inning of work, and he pitched really well. And he said that was the largest crowd he'd ever pitched in front of. Hmm. And, you know, so how they handle those nerves, whether the stat line looks good like it did for Thomas White or didn't, I think tells you more about the player in that moment than anything that the box score would.
Jonathan, we appreciate your time. Look forward to your article. As I mentioned, there's an article up, the standout players in each team so far through the spring breakout. Addison Barge, you're getting love for his throwing arm. I'm looking forward to that article, my friend. Thanks for doing this, as always.
Yeah, you're the best. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Be well. That's Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com, MLB Pipeline. And yeah, that way, I mean, the yeah, again, one game, but the thing about Addison Barger, it is nice to see when you hear something about a guy, you know, yeah, this guy has this. People talked about his arm. We saw his arm in spring training. It is kind of nice to see it on display in a game. You know what I mean? Like, it is. It's nice to see it.
Well, it also tells you that he's not ready, right? I mean, he chucks it up the backstop and you can't catch it. Like, that's sort of what it is, right? He's oozing talent. It's just the little things that would get him to the big leagues and keep him to the big leagues that he's just a little away from, right? It's the, when the heart rate goes up, you're playing in front of a few more people and you know everybody's watching, which is what happens in the big leagues. Like, that's controlling the heart rate's a big deal. I went through it. Everybody goes through it. How does it look? How do you do it? You know, can you still be the best you can be and not chuck balls up the backstop? So yeah, it's great to see the arm, but it's just everything else that goes with it. And it's just intriguing how you handle the other side of it. The dudes that I think sort of the backbone of the minor leagues and the backbone of your organization is not always the 30 guys. And for Jonathan to say that there was others that sort of stood out and made an impression on other organizations, it's a big deal. Yeah, like, it's a big deal selling that.
But it also, it just kind of gets to the point too, again, you know, how an organization views its players may differ than what we're seeing in some of the rankings, right?
Yeah.
And I guess that's the danger with just sort of limiting it, right? Like, what, there may be a guy who's the quote unquote 31st best prospect in the organization. There may be folks in the organization who say, yeah, that guy's, I mean, he's one of 31st. Never mind that. He's one of our best. He's one of our 10th. And you see that whenever trades are made and organizations pluck guys from other organizations, and you go, this guy is the 21st rated prospect, and boy, they think highly of him. Well, yeah, your value is what the other team, ultimately what the other team thinks you're worth. That's your value when it comes to prospects. I can list you as number one or number 10, but if the San Diego Padres think you're the best guy in the Jays system and they're going to make a trade, doesn't matter whether it's 10, 2, or 1. Good stuff, Mr. Barker. Enjoy the rest of the day. It's an off day for the Blue Jays. They'll be back in the field tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles. And we'll be back tomorrow as well from 11 to noon Eastern on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet.